listeners, this is Economically Yours, a financial podcast co-hosted by yours truly, Charmi Shah.
And I, Darshan Joshi.
This podcast is divided into four segments,
but united by the drive to create awareness about the economy and the financial markets.
Welcome to the first segment of Economically Yours. It's called Khabar Pakki Hai. Here, we'll be giving you a brief of what's happening in the financial markets and the economy in general for your better understanding and growth.
Dear listeners, the Valentine's month couldn't have started on a better note. We had Mrs. Nirmala Sitharaman, our finance minister, announce the annual budget for the fiscal year 2021. The massive 30.24 lakh crore budget has astonished the citizens of this country and also made the investors go gaga. The budget week was the best budget week in the last 10 years, with the markets reaching all-time high. So here's a lowdown from the healthcare sector that has seen an allocation of 2.23 lakh crore from this budget. It is approximately 6.5% of the government's budget and also 1.5% of the overall GDP. The healthcare budget has seen an increase of 137% in nominal terms from last year, wherein it was allotted a total of 94,000 crore. The government also plans to launch a new health scheme known as Pradhan Mantri Atmanirbhar Swasth Bharat Yojana, wherein it has replenished it with 64,180 crore to boost healthcare infrastructure over the next 6 years. It also plans to develop primary, secondary, and tertiary healthcare systems. A total of 17,000 rural and 11,000 urban health and wellness centers are to be set up, along with a public healthcare laboratories in 11 states. The government has also set aside 35,000 crore for the whole COVID vaccination program and a total of 60,000 crore for the Department of Water and Sanitation. Lastly, the budget for Department of Health and Family Welfare was raised to 71,000 crore. Furthermore, the expenditure in government's core healthcare programs is low in absolute terms, which we will get to know only in the next budget. Over to you, Charmi, for the next headlines.
Thank you, Darshan. While, you know, we got the numbers data out of the budget, I'd like to, you know, move on and narrate a story or a policy that's, you know, come out in this budget, which is the vehicle scrappage policy. So now as Indians, we want the maximum out of every asset we own, right? But sometimes this habit can lead to assets becoming a liability. Here's what I mean when I say that. Vehicles, when in use for more than 15 to 20 years, start becoming inefficient as they consume more fuel, emit more pollutants, as older vehicles pollute 10 to 25 times more than vehicles that have just come out of the showroom. Also, having depreciated fully to its life, these old vehicles actually become costlier to maintain, not just for the owner, but for the environment and society in general as well. So, if such vehicles are left unchecked, India could have some 2 crore out of shape granny style old vehicles plying the roads by 2025. But India never had a clear cut policy on dealing with such vehicles until this time's budget, where the Indian government announced that they were soon going to come out with a dedicated vehicle scrappage policy. The process is simple. Vehicles in use beyond the said years will be pulled off from the roads and thrown into scrap yards where the dismantling will happen. Post that, dismantled parts will undergo recycling wherever applicable, and those parts will be put to productive use. Not only will this solve a bit of the pollution problem, but also provide an impetus to the auto sector. Given that you scrap off the old vehicle, you will want to buy a new one, and if more people get aligned into doing this, sales of auto sector will definitely boost up in the long run. But wait, here's the catch. The program is going to be voluntary. You can scrap your vehicles only if you want to. However, if your vehicle is older than 15 years, it will have to undergo a mandatory fitness test. And if it fails the test, then you can't ply it on the roads, basically. It's as simple as that. But the problem is that these tests are expected to cost somewhere between 40,000 to 50,000, which is not cheap. But the government won't stop at that. Personal vehicle owners, unless they own hybrids, electric or CNG, will also have to shell out an annual green tax when they renew their registration. So I think it's pretty clear that if you have an old polluting vehicle, the government will do everything in its power to make sure that you take it off the roads. And if you're willing to scrap it, maybe they will throw in some added incentives as well. The only question here is, how long will it take for this policy to come to fruition? Thank you. Over to you, Darshan.
Thank you so much, Charmi. So the next headlines is about the National Hydrogen Mission, which the government is about to launch. Adani ji, aap haste hue acche lagte hai. So the draft document for this National Hydrogen Mission is to be finalized by the end of this month. The government has allotted a total of 1,000 crores to the Solar Energy Corporation of India and an additional 1,500 crore to Indian Renewable Energy Development Agency. The government aims to develop India as a global hub for manufacturing of hydrogen and fuel cells technology. It will further be aligned with Make in India and Atmanirbhar Bharat through incentives and facilitation programs. It also hopes to use hydrogen in industries such as steel, petrochemicals, and fertilizers. A robust framework for standards and regulations for hydrogen technologies will also be proposed by the current government. Furthermore, on a yearly basis, the mission is supposed to attract investments of 60,000 crore and create 45,000 jobs and reduce emissions of 28.5 million tons of CO2 per year. It is just going to be a matter of time before we realize how much of it is going to be true. So over to you, Charmi, for the last headlines.
Well, thanks, Darshan. And for the concluding headlines today, we have another acquisition of an NBFC. So after Piramal Group's acquisition of the crisis-ridden DHFL, early this year, billionaire businessman and vaccine king, Mr. Aadhar Poonawalla, has become the latest industrialist to jump onto the NBFC bandwagon. Rising Sun Holdings, a company controlled in his personal capacity by Serum Institute of India, CEO Aadhar Poonawalla announced a transaction on 10th of February to acquire a controlling stake in an NBFC, Magma Fincorp Limited. The deal will be carried out via a preferential issue of Magma Fincorp's equity share worth Rs. 3,456 crores. This deal also includes an open offer as per SEBI norms. Now, Magma Fincorp or MFL will also make a preferential issue of 1.7 crore shares each to Sanjay Chhamria and Mayank Poddar, members of the promoters and promoter group of the company. The promoters, which held 24.39% stake in MFL at the end of December 2020, will now, along after the post-acquisition, will hold a stake of about 2.34% each. That is, Mr. Chhamria and Poddar will now hold 2.34% each, whereas Rising Sun Holdings will have 60% stake in MFL, along with, of course, being classified as a promoter of Magma Fincorp. MFL and its subsidiaries will be renamed and rebranded under the brand name Poonawalla Finance, subject to regulatory approvals. The existing financial services business of Poonawalla Finance will be consolidated into MFL, subject to compliance with current regulations. The company is planning to hold a shareholder meeting to the preferential allotment on 9th of March 2021. I think that rounds up about our headlines. And with that, let's move on to the second segment. So in today's episode, our Margdarshak is a CA, Mr. Prashant Desai. He's 49 and has 26 years of experience in the financial industry, having worked previously with Rakesh Jhunjhunwala and now with Everstone Capital, Singapore-headquartered private equity firm with USD 5 billion in assets. He is currently seconded to Burger King as the head of strategy and investor relations. He also runs a financial literacy series titled Frankly Speaking Finance that talks about the mindset required to make money. So welcome aboard Economically Yours, Mr. Desai, and we thank you for coming on board. So talking about your YouTube web series, Frankly Speaking Finance with Prashant Desai, I observed that, you know, you started the web series in January, if I'm not wrong, correct? And so Economically Yours also took place in November. Was it a competition that you are planning to give us, or what was the motive behind it on a serious note that we want to, you know, begin with?
I would say, since you guys started before us, you guys were inspiration more than competition. So thank you for inspiring similar stuff that we need to do. So my inspiration, the reason to do that was slightly different. Two broader thought process. One, over the last a decade or so, you will have family, friends, colleagues coming and talking about how to make money, where to invest, where not to invest. And in some of the conversations that I would have a lot with youngsters like yourself, what I realized is that making money was less about making money, but more about changing the mindset of people when it came to things around money. And during lockdown, all of us had this crisis of trying to reinvent ourselves, what to do, what not to do. So I kind of realized that why not try and do something on the financial literacy space, education space, where from a country perspective, there are a lot of people I feel probably could benefit from some of these things. And the thought behind this was, earlier I always wanted to do that, but never knew how do I reach more people through this. But thanks to social media, that part has become relatively easy. So I kind of write or think Monday to Friday, and every Saturday or alternate Saturday is when I record my episodes, and they are always free for everyone. They will always remain free. There is no monetization process behind this. It's more if I can use the word philanthropy in a different way. But the idea is, if I can even, inspire or wake maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 people, I probably would feel good about it, because this is one subject where I think a lot of people needs a lot of awakening.
Moving on to the third segment of this podcast, which is Markets Ki Kahani, Speaker Ki Zubani. As the name suggests, in this segment, we'll be discussing and talking with the speaker about the current market scenario and indulge ourselves in a conversation which will focus on explaining the episode name.
And moving on to the third segment, it's Valentine's Day today. So I would like to ask you, how did you fall in love with finance? And why not something else like marketing? Yeah, kuch aur. So what made you fall in love with finance, given that you are a chartered accountant and you are heading a corporate firm?
Yeah, I actually fell in love with stock markets way back when I was young. And the reason for that was very interesting. I lost my father when I was 7 years old. We did not have money as a family. We probably would get 2 pairs of clothes every year to wear. And we always lived in kind of a poor state, poverty kind of a state, and struggling for money, which at one level made me a lot greedy to make money, because I would see my friends, a lot of our relatives doing well, going out, eating at good places. I always wanted to do that. And therefore, one recognized very early in life that to have a good life, you need a decent amount of money. So that was one part to it. Second thing, I did not know how to make money. And this changed the day my brother decided to get married. When he decided to get married, my mom took out a bunch of share certificates that my father used to invest. My father was a big believer in stock market being a creator of wealth. And what had happened is, he had not touched this for 20 years. And when my brother and I kind of made a note of what the value was, we were astounded that in 20 years, what had happened. We were actually decently poised, but we never knew about it. And that's where I kind of realized, what is this where money multiplies this much? And then I recognized this is something called a stock markets. And then I realized that this is where I want to kind of build my career on. So it was very early on I decided. One thing, when I spoke to a few people, I realized that to kind of understand stock markets better, one will need to understand companies better. For that, you will need to have acquire professional degrees to read a balance sheet of a company. And that's how I became a chartered accountant. I even before my CA final results came, I was already working for a stockbroker in Calcutta doing research for them. So for me, CA was more a medium to understand numbers, finance, taxation, all of that. I never wanted to get into audit as a space. So that's how I stock market became my Valentine.
Okay, so, you know, since we're talking about stock markets, we can't really go move on without considering the recent budget, the recent rally in the markets. So what is your take? Do you really believe in the concept of, you know, high valuations and market rallying in spite of it? Or are you of the view that this is an asset? This is a bubble that's going to, you know, burst very soon.
A very, very interesting question, and I don't know how to answer it. I'll try to answer it in three different parts, one to make myself look like a fool. So about 3-4 months back, I used to think that it's a bubble. More than a bubble, I used to think the market has gone ahead of itself. I think there is a significant divergence between what we are seeing on the ground versus what the market was reading into it. Horribly wrong. I was sitting on cash, and probably the markets have moved up from where I was 3 months back, almost 30-40%, which also brought me to a different understanding of the markets. Is I always knew that market always discounts the future. What I did not know, where I thought probably market is discounting 22 earnings, maybe market was discounting 23 or 24. This was all kind of, if you keep it in the perspective on a garb of too much of liquidity globally. Central banks all over the world are keeping interest rates low. Every single central bank had infused so much of liquidity in the market. And all this liquidity was chasing growth, which came to emerging markets, within emerging markets into India, being a democracy, being the governance standards are good, good regulators over here from SEBI perspective. So somewhere we were kind of, I could not read that. On top of that, all our Robinhood investors, I did not know in COVID, so many people will get back into markets. I don't know if you know this number or not. But from pre-COVID to currently, about close to about 15 million Demat accounts have got opened. 1.5 crore Demat accounts. That tells you some kind of a story. And ultimately, stock price is a function of demand and supply. As the demand went up, supply remaining constant, the market kept moving up. But the third part to this question is, I am now a convert. I have recognized that I was wrong to have kind of had that kind of a thought process. I feel this budget is a very different budget. I have been seeing budget since 1995, every single budget. And I think I have not seen a budget like this. The reason for that is twofold. One, the way the finance minister played this budget was very smart. 5 days prior to the budget, the markets were down. So the expectations were nothing great going into the market. And when the expectations are nothing and you go and deliver, the whole country kind of, you know, wakes up. That same thing Ajinkya Rahane did after the 36 all-out Indian test. Second thing what she did is she completely surprised all of us. So principally, what is it that did it? I think in very crude manner, she said that India is now open for growth. India always positioned itself as a place or a country or an economy that will grow. But there was a divergence in walk versus the talk. We always used to talk big but do nothing. Every single budget before that, if you see, all the money that the government was raising was going towards farmers, was going towards poor people, etc., etc., etc. And something was missing in the budget from a capitalistic standpoint. This time, what I think the finance minister has done differently is, one, if you see, India does not have money. She was getting into a budget where India did not have money. She did not have money to spend. So she said, I will do two things. First thing, what I will do is I will sell some of my assets. Whether it is LIC, whether it is two private insurance businesses, land assets for the first time getting monetized. So I said, okay, I will get money. I will use this money now not to give it to poor people, but I will build infrastructure. I will start the CapEx cycle. Second thing she said that if this money is less, I will go and borrow. So India's borrowing budget this time is 12 lakh crores. What that does for us fiscally is maybe by fiscal deficit as a percentage to GDP will grow. And she's already gone and told the world, my fiscal deficit target, what I was thinking of 22, give me another 5 years. But in this 5 years, I want to make India a very credible alternative to China. This is the vision part of it. In our private equity world, we have a very interesting saying which says, vision without execution is hallucination. I think the vision was brilliant. That's how the market has responded. Execution remains to be seen. But the direction is very clear. This is capitalism via socialism. I have never seen something like this. So I will be capitalist in my approach, and I hope that through this capitalistic approach, I will bridge the gap between the poor and the rich through employment, through a lot of other things. For the first time, Prime Minister has come on record and kind of said there is a great role that the private sector plays in creating growth and building wealth. And creating wealth is not a bad thing. So for a lot of these reasons, I feel this budget is a remarkable landmark budget. And I feel next 5 to 10 years, all of us included, are going to make so much of money that we don't.
So I'm sure the budget was came as a surprise for all the investors. And being a cricket fanatic, I am sure that you know that England is touring India, and there has been no great captain than Virat Kohli, and he has timed the ball every time that he has played. So making that point relevant to the equities markets, it is very important for investors to, you know, time the market before you actually make money. So I'm sure that you must have stumbled upon a few mistakes or committed a few mistakes in the markets. So how did you learn from those mistakes, and how have you applied in the long run?
Oh, if I start talking about my mistakes, probably we'll have to spend 2-3 days talking about it. But some of the important mistakes that I kind of learned very early on was not to sell a stock early. What sometimes happens is, because especially for me, because I had not seen too much of money, every time the stock would probably go up by 40% or would double in a shorter period of time, I would exit. And that's where I realized that I'm exiting, but why am I exiting? What am I going to do with that money? I'm taking that money and investing in another stock. The idea is then, why not remain invested in this stock? If the idea was to exit and then keep that money and probably either buy a house or do something with it, which was not stock market oriented, fine. People may have need. But if you don't need it, just because the stock has moved up faster than you expected, I don't think the reason. I'll tell you, in Diwali of 2008 or 9, at that point of time, I was sitting on a large chunk of Titan. And in 1 year, the Titan stock had gone up by almost 150%. So one, it was a very large part of my portfolio. And in about a year's time, I had made 1.5 times the money that I wanted to. And I said, boss, I don't want to be greedy, let me sell. I went, I sold. From there, today, the stock has gone up by 100 times. So yes, I would say don't be in a hurry. Second, patience is required. If you are in stock markets, it's a game of conviction and patience. Your patience will be tested, but your conviction will be rewarded. Don't invest in stock markets if you don't have a slightly longer term view, because it's a wealth creating machine, but you will have to give the machine to get oil. In that interim, yes, there will be challenges. You will feel frustrated. Sometimes the market may remain sideways for maybe 2 years, but if you have belief in it, remain invested in the markets, have patience, have conviction. Again, some of these things that we kind of learned. Third very big learning is, most of us, including myself, started treating stock market like a casino. And today, I think 90% of investors today look at stock market as a casino. Everybody is here to make a quick buck. Everybody wants to buy today, sell tomorrow, make a little bit of money, which is fine, as long as you know what you are doing. But if you lose money, you can't blame the stock markets. You can't blame the medium. But everybody ends up blaming the medium. When I was with Rakesh Bhaiya used to tell us that 99.9% of traders lose money. Only 0.01% of traders actually make money. And the reason is, trading is not a part-time job. It's a full-time profession. So I don't trade now. I used to trade. I've lost a lot of money. Twice I got bankrupt trading. Because, in Gujarati, we have a saying, Hariyo Jugari Babdu Rame. The guy who loses wants to recover, so he will bet double every time. What you don't realize is you are taking higher and higher risk. And these are some of the things which are interesting that I kind of learned from Rakesh Bhaiya. And one other thing that I learned is risk and return go hand in hand. Everybody, I am yet a person who understands risk and reward. This includes my colleagues who have spent their lifetime in the world of finance. I have met professors who teach risk in Harvard, in Stanford. But everybody wants to make equity returns by taking fixed deposit risks. It doesn't happen. If you want higher returns, you don't have a choice but to take risk. Everybody wants higher return, but nobody wants to take risk. It doesn't happen. So yes, lots and lots of learning. And last learning I will share is, this is something, I don't know if you guys would relate to this, but this is amongst the stock market circles. The ego comes as your opening batsman, right? In everything in life, but in stock market especially. So if there is a stock that you probably recommended to your friend and it has gone up, the first thing you will come and say, "Dekh, maine bola tha na, stock badh gaya. Dekh, maine bola tha na, it gone." I don't know if you know this quote by George Soros, which says, it doesn't matter whether you are right or wrong. It matters how much money you made when you are right and how much money you lost when you are wrong. A lot of people kind of guide you. And one of the portfolio management schemes kind of approached me and gave me a one-hour presentation why I should hand over my portfolio to them to manage. And I heard them, what their strategies were, everything. I heard them. Them only one question: who's your fund manager? And he told me the fund manager's name. I said, I will give you my entire portfolio to manage. You just do me one favor. I want the DMAT statement of your fund manager. So I said, don't tell me what to do, just give me your DMAT statement. I will know what to do. Because most people give an advice which is different than what they do. So if you heard of a fund manager called Prashant Jain heads HDFC Mutual Fund. Today he's the CIO. Ever since I have known Prashant, and ever since the market has known Prashant, every single drop of saving that he has had, the money goes into HDFC Mutual Fund. He does not have anything else in his portfolio, only one thing, which is HDFC Mutual Fund. And that he has been for the last 25 years. Today, Prashant Jain must be northwards of 2,000 crores in value. But more importantly, he's put his money where his mouth is.
So, I mean, that's a good takeaway for us, who the two of us just entering the markets in the last year or two. So I think, but, you know, as you correctly said, so I have personally experienced this as well, that, you know, when my particular stock in the portfolio is going up, I will, you know, take an exit impatiently. But when it's going down, I will literally marry the stock. I will not, you know, go against my convictions. So that's one thing that I think it's a great takeaway. Moving on. So, you know, we've just entered the new decade, and, you know, every decade brings with us a lot of opportunities and stuff. So talking about this decade, where do you see India heading towards the next decade? And what do you think, where would the markets reach by the end of this particular decade financially?
Oh, tough question to answer, where the market would reach in. But I will not be surprised if the market goes anything less than 5x in the next 10 years. So let's say if we are today at a Nifty of say 50,000, in the next 10 years, if the Nifty is less than 2,50,000, I will be disappointed. As far as the country is concerned, as I said, we have great vision. I think the heart is in the right place in terms of what to do. Execution, we will need to see. If they achieve even 60 to 65% of the execution, what they are talking of, I think India will, for the first time ever, deliver a double-digit GDP growth. This year we will, because the base is low. I'm talking consistently for 3-4 years. If that happens, and let's assume today India's per capita GDP is roughly about $2,100. In 5 years, if $2,000 goes to somewhere closer to about $4,000, $5,000, just multiply that $4,000, $5,000 into 140 crore Indians. And you just imagine this set of Indians, if they save, the money comes into equity markets and a lot of financial markets. If they spend, the consumption cycle gets a very different level of momentum, which will again drive corporate profits. I don't know where it will go, but currently looking at it, it seems we've not even seen the tip of the iceberg when it comes to getting capital into those countries, both domestic and global. Everybody is waiting for the first question that you asked, for the market to correct a little bit so that I can put money. I don't know when the markets will correct. If it corrects, I think everybody should.
So as she correctly pointed out, where we are headed in the future, because the mode of investment of the mode of savings is changing by, you know, after every decade. And previously when we used to have precious metals as, you know, a form of payments, and now we have come to an era where we have bitcoins. So where do you see that the vehicle of investment or vehicle of saving going? Do you feel that Bitcoin is a safe haven?
No, it's not a safe haven. I am not a very big believer of Bitcoin, not because from a technology standpoint, but given the sample size of Bitcoin being so small, it is subject to being manipulated. And anything that has the subject to getting manipulated, like GameStop, the stock, right?
Yes.
Because the liquidity is so small in this, there chances of its manipulation are high. So is Bitcoin another mode of payment? Probably. But is this investing? I don't know. It will get into the very high risk, high return kind of a zone. If somebody kind of looks at Bitcoin as something that they want to look at from an investing standpoint, invest. Tell yourself it's a high risk. Chances of you losing money are high in that sense. One of the reasons why I started, frankly speaking, finance was to kind of get more people to understand, recognize the power of stock markets. Today, 40 lakh crore is lying in savings bank. Today, State Bank of India pays you 2.9% interest rates on savings bank. Your inflation today is 7%. If India goes on a growth path, because both crude oil and gold is something that we are dependent to import, I feel inflation, we will get into a high inflationary zone. Growth does not come in a low inflationary zone. If growth comes, inflation will go. If inflation is 6 to 7%, you are making 3% every year on your savings. You are actually becoming poor every year by 4%. And that's not a small amount, 40 lakh crores, 10 crore Indians. So my sense is here, I would want people to, you know, move from savings maybe into slightly more riskier assets, because without risk, it's going to be difficult for you to generate the alpha today and beat inflation. The first target for anybody who wants a better life, especially because a lot of you youngsters will be listening, first target should be to beat inflation. So you look at your portfolio and see how much return am I generating. If your return is less than 7%, and I'm talking of return, I'm talking post-tax, on that 2.9%, there is another 30% of tax that you need to pay. If your post-tax return is less than 7%, in my sense, not making money, you're losing money. Now the question is, what do I do if I lose money? I have to take risk. Because the moment you move from savings to fixed, from savings or fixed to say corporate deposit, or you get into REITs, or you get into any other structure, you are moving up the risk. I'm saying start because it's Valentine's Day, start flirting with risk. Start kind of, you know, holding hands of risk. Because if you don't do that, it's a matter of time before you will see a lot of guys around you will move ahead, people who have taken that risk. So yeah, that's my expectation.
Yeah, it's like a risk hai to ishq hai.
Absolutely. And I think that has been my biggest learning of 25 years, thanks to that brilliant writing. So many of my columns, I tell them the heading is Risk Hai Toh Ishq. I just love that.
I think the series in itself was a lot of insight, gave us a lot of insights on the markets in general as well, apart from the dialogues, of course. So thank you, Mr. Desai, for this segment and your insights. Sites on the same. I wish that, you know, people do get that financial education, that financial literacy that, you know, you as well as other veterans are hoping for. And let's, you know, apart from going up the ladder on risk, let's also hope that people do up their ladders in terms of investing into other modes of investments. Thanks again. And with that, we'll move on to the fourth segment.
Welcome to the fourth and the last segment of Economically Yours. It's called Economy Mein Lag Gayi Aag. So this is a quick fire round where the co-host will shoot words alternatively to the speaker
and he or she will have to reply with the first word or phrase that pops up in the mind.
My first word would be financial literacy.
Big time need, currently almost negligible in this country.
My first word would be portfolio.
Portfolio. Portfolio is like your love life here.
Okay, best investment.
For me, a company called Shilpa Medicare, I still hold on.
Being a CA, audit.
What is that? But I have a very interesting story on audit.
Savings account.
Pending account.
Okay.
Pension.
Good place to put your money.
Taxes.
Great. It's a great motivator to build the country. Everybody should pay taxes.
Net worth.
Oh, brilliant. The factor. That's only one thing which I want to be fat in.
Okay. And my last word is, okay, so it's basically a choice. And whatever you choose, you'll have to give a phrase on that. Equity or debt?
Equity, 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 equity. You can stop it when you want. Equity, 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 equity.
Okay. I think
since
it's
1995,
okay.
Since 1995, 100% of my wealth is in equity, and it will remain so till I die.
And my last word would be Prashant Desai's balance sheet.
Far less than what people think, far more than what I need.
That's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on our platform. And just before
thank you guys. Thank you so much for having me. And I just want you to keep doing the good work. Every small thing matters. And I keep saying a little becomes a lot. So don't give up. Don't look at your subscriber. Just put on. Right? And it's just a matter of time before this becomes.
Thank you so much for your knowledge. And before we end this episode, we'll just like to ask you one question each. And from my side, it would be that given that you are such an amazing financial planner, how would you rate your retirement plan on a scale of 1 to 10? And if you could please throw some light.
I have completely planned. The way you look at your retirement is I don't want to retire. My wish, and I'm writing a book currently, is that till I take my last breath, I want to work. I love working. My work could differ, but I want to work till the last breath. Like, even if it is 98, 99, I want to work. I love working. So I don't have a retirement because I don't plan to retire. Maybe I'll die, but I won't.
Great. Okay. And my last concluding question to you is that, you know, we know that you've worked with Rakesh, sir. So apart from him, if you had to, you know, name few of your mentors or your guide, you know, your gurus, who would that be?
So gurus necessarily in the financial world, I would say Rakesh Bhaiya is a big. Rakesh Bhaiya, CEO Utpal Sheth. Utpal has guided me significantly. Bhaiya is a genius to a very different level. His ability to see what others can't see. He was a mission titan than Tata's itself. I remember once he had done a meeting with Ratan Tata where he was actually telling Ratan Tata where Titan would go rather than Ratan Tata telling him where Titan would go and stuff like that. So yes, but I've learned a lot from Utpal Sheth. More on the understanding and the science behind markets. That's one person that I kind of, another person I have a lot of respect for. I also learned a lot about markets in a different manner currently from my two bosses, Samir Sen and Atul Kapoor, who are both private equity investors. Because they are private equity investors, they look at public markets very differently. And there are ways things they've taught me, which I kind of now look at markets very differently, especially the first thing that I told you, look at market as a marathon. Creating wealth is a marathon. It's not a 100-meter race. So these are some of the things that I've kind of grown to learn from. Then, of course, I used to know Harshad Mehta well. I've learned a lot of things from Harshad Mehta, more what not to do than what to do. But yes, everything is a teacher for me. So yes, lots and lots of people to thank.
Great, sir. Many thanks again for, you know, coming on Economically Yours. We really are grateful to you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, guys, and have a good
day. Thank you so much.
Yeah.